Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. We are coming at you early this week. We're late last week. We're early this week. So anybody that was a little mad last week, hopefully we made you a little happy this week. We're all about give and take.
Yeah, it's important.
It's important. We're a compromising society here at the BBP.
Yeah.
We're here for everybody. We wanted to make sure we got to this week's podcast as early as possible because pretty much Tuesday, almost everything we say might just start changing and be irrelevant.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's hard. This time of year is hard when you start getting into things that happen on the NFL schedule because free agency, the tampering window, the legal tampering window starts Tuesday. And then Thursday at 4 o'clock is maybe the craziest few hours of every year in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's when the new league year starts. Free agency officially opens. Adam Schefter will have four phones in front of him while he's sitting on the desk at ESPN. I do love, I got to say, a slight tangent here. Do you the people seem divided on this, so, and we've never talked about this before, Jim. Do you like or love the fact that these shows, particularly these types of shows on free agency, have completely made it okay to just not pay attention to the fact that you're on camera and just work while on camera on all your phones and be even having phone conversations while you're doing a segment? I personally love it, but I don't know what you think.
Yeah, some people hate it. I do find it interesting, and while it's not great television, I do like it because I'll be honest, Paul, like, you know, we as reporters are asked to do so much all the time. And I kind of like the fact that in that moment, like, doing your job at its core still trumps entertainment. But yet somehow then becomes entertainment in and of itself. So while it's interesting to me, it's always has been that certain guys in this business don't have to write anymore. They still have to make the calls and do the reporting. So it is interesting that it's sort of like put on display, and all credit to him and guys on other networks that they end up showing them doing that, that they can kind of like separate themselves and not do the weird like eyeball look at the camera while they're online, like give a like smile, like, yeah, you know what I mean? It's
yeah, it's just completely unfiltered. And I feel like it started as Schefter's way of being like, listen, are you really going to put me on live during this time because I'm doing so much? And he's like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to talk on the phone then on your show. It's probably the first time was probably how it started. And now it's like this cool thing where everyone loves to watch him sit there and work the phone while everyone else talks. Cause it's crazy. So let's go into we mean for this podcast to be a free agency primer. There's obviously lots of draft stuff that came out of our weekend at the Combine, which is still ongoing, but the media is all gone now. So we have lots of stuff there, but trust, we'll get to all of that. But for the sake of right now, a lot of that's going to change. And all that really matters right now is what's going to happen this week with the Bengals free agents. And they are sought after again for the second straight year. I think we originally knew they'd be sought after, but it hasn't been made as big a deal of as it was last year, but it may end up being maybe more impactful depending on how it goes when you talk about comp picks and players lost.
So we'll see, but we want this to just be focused mainly on free agency. So obviously, we've been talking about these three guys for a while, so let's kind of dive in as free agency is here now, where everybody stands. And we'll start with an easy one. We need to ease into this. Let's ease into this. So let's just start with one that you guys all know where I'm going to start if I'm easing into it, and that's Kevin Zeitler. He gone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this has been pretty clear since the start of the 2016 season when, you know, we reported way back when, you know, an extension was not an offing. And while the Bengals aren't afraid to let their own get to the unrestricted free agent market, clearly, this is one of those examples, Paul, where I think, unlike Marvin Jones, where the team felt they can maybe stretch a little bit on sort of a second-tier receiver, Kevin Zeitler is a first-tier guard on the market, and I think everyone knew from the beginning it was going to be at least $10 million per year. Bengals not comfortable with that number for a guard, never have been, but he's going to get it. So yeah, it's definitely the end of a 5-year run. You know, where one of those few times where a Bengals draft pick walked in and then started. And started from day one. So, but it's going to be a big number. That's for sure. Yeah.
And a pretty good chance he sets the market at guard. Honestly, I mean, he could be the first one that signs, and everybody else follows in his lead. There's a good chance of that.
Yeah, because he fits a sweet spot in a lot of ways, Paul, for free agency. I mean, he's a starter. I mean, he started 40 straight regular season games, so he's been healthy. But it's also, frankly, it's an age thing. You know, TJ Lang, probably the most other well-known guard that's coming up. He's 2 years older than Kevin Zeitler, and some of the other guys who are coming up. Ron Leary, you know, comes to mind in Dallas. Well, Ron Leary was benched. You know, he hasn't played. So Kevin Zeitler is the top of the class, top of the market, and he will be paid like that because, frankly, when you're the best of the bunch that's available, that usually means you get the most money.
Yeah, and you know, there's been a league obsession with guard as the interior line becomes more important, and I think that's going to show itself as it has over this last. I mean, I think the Bengals end up being victims of bad timing here in that if Kevin Zeitler would have been drafted in 2010 or 11, I think they could have got him and he would have been like Geno Atkins was when they set the market at defensive tackle. When they signed Geno Atkins to that 5-year, $55 million deal, they were the first to get in on those guys right before it exploded and Ndamukong Suh and Gerald McCoy and all that happens. Well, this is the opposite of that.
Right.
This was Kevin Zeitler came in and he came up after the market had exploded. I think if the Bengals could have done with Kevin Zeitler what they were able to do with Geno Atkins, he would be a Bengal for, you know, a long time, maybe for life. But they don't feel like the market is correct in this.
Yeah, and I think I'll have a little more context on this. I think when he signs or at least agrees to an offer sheet, just a reminder, you're going to hear a lot of deals announced over the next 2 days. None can be signed until Thursday at 4 p.m. at the earliest. That's the start of the new league year. You know, Paul, I think Kevin Zeitler gambled on himself and clearly won. I think the Bengals tried to get something done right about the same time they re-signed Clint Bowling in the spring of 2015. 5 years, $26 million. At the time, not chump change. Anywhere from 10th or 11th highest paid guard in the league at that time, which now goes to show you how far it's come just in 2 years. And Kevin Zeitler's like, you know what? No, I think let's revisit this down the road. They pick up his option at $8 million per. Well, that just sets a new floor. So, I mean, Kevin Zeitler sort of played this the right way, too. Maybe Duke Tobin will get a true third rounder because I know you wrote an interesting little nugget this past week. He wasn't real happy with the comp picks they got over the past year, but Kevin Zeitler might be one that actually cracks that elusive third round ceiling. Based on total dollars.
Without the quarterbacks really on the market, and some of the like really big, last year was just crazy.
Right.
The amount of money people were getting, and this contract that Kevin Zeitler is about to get, if this was last year, would have gotten the Bengals a third round comp pick. Right. So I think that's the other thing you're saying. A, we don't believe in the market, and B, we'll get a third rounder for this almost certainly. And Bengals fans now, I got to tell you, I didn't have this on the plan to go into. Maybe some people saying, oh no, Paul, don't go on a comp pick rant. Oh my God. I know I'm the only person in the world that cares about this, but I was shocked to see the blowback from Bengals fans about this, about thinking the Bengals comp pick strategy is stupid. Yeah. And I've seen this. I saw this when the picks came out, and just because I wrote about how they were disappointed and how close they were to getting higher picks, people think it's stupid what they're doing. Listen, you need to look across the league at what the best teams are doing, the teams that are making the Super Bowl. I get it. Everyone says, yeah, well, look at what happened with Atlanta. They signed Alex McMillan. You sign guys well, you could make things happen. But no one is talking about the comp pick strategy, because the best teams have been the ones that have had the most comp picks. That's fact. You can go look it up. The teams that have won the most Super Bowls are the teams that are in the top 10 of utilizing the comp picks. In today's day and age, when Mike Glennon might get $15 million, and guy, you look at the contracts that are about to go out to guys that you're going to say, are you kidding me? You have to have the most quality guys in the first 4 years on their rookie deals contributing. That's where value is in great rosters. Period. And the only way you do that is by adding more picks. Are they always the round that you want them to be? No, they're not all. They were one spot away three times from being a round higher, and they're a little disappointed in that. But they still have four extra picks in rounds that in recent years have. And everyone says, well, they didn't get anybody with comp picks. I'm not talking about the actual comp picks. It's about having multiple swings at late round shots. So that makes you're able to take chances on certain guys that you like with your other regular picks. It allows you to get George Iloka, Marvin Jones, Geno Atkins. You go down the list of guys that they have drafted on day three, what's now day three, on the fourth round and beyond in recent years. They haven't hit on as many of those lately, but they also, last year they only had seven, and now they'll have 11 total picks. I'm legitimately shocked when I see people talking about how the Bengals are stupid for trying to get comp picks instead of spending money and signing these guys. Well, guess what? You're assuming that they had the money to sign those guys. They're deciding which guys are the best to let walk to have the best payout on the back end and still pay everybody, pay as many people as they can and get the most rookie value that they can. I just look around the league at the teams that are winning. They're all winning at the comp pick game. So I don't have really the time to go into that and fight that Twitter battle with people that are so mad about this. That's my rant. I knew this was going to happen. We're recording this too early on a Monday morning. I knew I was going to get angry. I didn't want to. I'm a happy guy. I want to be happy, but that topic really frustrates me. I'm sorry, Jim. I'm sorry if I stole your why you're mad. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, you know, and real quick before we move on to another guy who's going to get paid off the team. All people need to do again is look at, you know, the lone dynasty in professional sports. You know, I mean, Dante Hightower, Logan Ryan, Martellus Bennett are all going to hit the market. Bill Belichick's going to thank them for their service, you know, mail their ring next year, and then in 2018 get a bevy of third and fours, you know, for those guys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's proper management, and it is the best thing to do in general. Although I do understand Bengals' frustration, because the optics are never good for Cincinnati, Paul. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
You know, they can sign Kevin Zeitler for 5 years, $55 million, and it's not going to create any waves because it's Kevin Zeitler. Now, if they sign Ron Leary for 5 years, it's, oh my God, the Bengals signed a free agent. you know what I mean? Like it's just one of those things where it's just not a sexy way of doing business in pro sports. You know, George Ilocas' $36 million deal is one of the biggest for safety last year. You know what I mean? And it's just, mm-hmm. it just doesn't make any waves, at least in town. But one guy leaves, or two guys, you know what I mean? It's just the way it goes. But speaking of that, though, I mean, you know, another guy who's going to get paid, and I've been sort of on this boat since last year when his extension didn't work out, was corner Drake or Patrick, and just yes. where that market's gone as well. Now, corners have always been highly paid, but as with everyone else, you know, Tremaine Johnson franchise tagged for the second year in a row in L.A., and why does that matter? Because the franchise tag by itself is $14 million or so for a corner. However, it's the second year in a row Johnson's been tagged. He's getting paid over $16 million. What does that mean? There's your ceiling. Yep. And, you know, you got to believe there's some owners and GMs around the team, around the league, that look at Washington and Kirk Cousins and look at, you know, Les Snead in L.A. and are like, guys, what are you doing? You know, Drake or Patrick, on the other hand, should be sending Les Snead handwritten thank you notes.
Right.
Because Dre's getting, I mean, Dre might get overpaid even by the Bengals at this point. I mean, it's his market's really exploded.
Yeah, it has. And that's, and he, I think we both are in agreement. He is the most interesting of the Bengals free agents to be watching this week. And it, because he's up there in this class with AJ Bouye and Logan Ryan. And I get, you know, Stephon Gilmore probably thinks he's in his own class.
Right.
But you've got these, they're so sought after. The only thing going against Dre and those guys is how strong the draft is going to be.
Right.
At corner. Is maybe some team will balk at a huge deal and say, you know, at that money, I'm just going to go to this deep draft at corner. That's the only thing I can see. But everything else, it looks like, you know, these guys are going to get paid pretty high. Well, you're talking over $10 million average per year. We'll see, you know, whatever your guarantees end up being is right. different. But, you know, the current highest average per year is Josh Norman at 15.
Right.
I mean, and you're going to see some, I mean, Stephon Gilmore's asking for way over that. And some of these guys are going to probably approach that, if not right. get something in that. You're going to be talking about paying one of those guys I just mentioned. And I don't think anybody would put the guys I just mentioned in the same boat as people I'm about to mention. Josh Norman, Darrell Revis in his prime, Patrick right. Peterson, Richard Sherman. I mean, right. are you going to put those guys in? But guess what? Monetarily, they're probably about to be in that area. They're about to be at least approaching that area.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're the Bengals, how much is Dre Kirkpatrick worth to you is the question. And if they have the money, you know, like last year, Marvin Jones, they worked so hard and they overextended themselves to try to get Marvin Jones. He wanted to be a number one wide receiver, so he left. So that money, the extra money, went to them giving in to George Iloka and maybe overpaying for George Iloka because he was their number two priority and they wanted to get him.
Right.
Is that what happens this year by not re-signing Kevin Zeitler? Are they willing? How far are they willing to overextend for a position they have drafted to replace? Are you going to do that? Are you going to pay him almost as much as AJ Green?
That's you're right. I mean, that's what makes Dre so interesting is, you know, when people are reading this or listening to it, you know, at 11 a.m. Tuesday, he and his representation is allowed to get offers and sort of legally shop himself to the other 31 teams. And you're right. The Bengals really truly believe in the paycheck status in the locker room. You know, they think AJ Green, Andy Dalton, Geno Atkins should be the highest paid guys on the team. And while the market may change to a point, especially with Andy, down the line, you know, I do think they take that into account, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just those guys specifically, it's more the positions. So I guess I should qualify it with that. And you're right, Paul. It's like, and I'm sure someone might be saying, well, what's the difference between giving Dre 5 and 55 and Kevin Zeitler 5 and 55? Like, it's the same money, but the Bengals don't view it that way because they view corner as a skill position and skill positions get paid. The difference there is what you just said to me, Paul, is what really makes it interesting with the Bengals is they have Darquez Dennard. 1 year left on his deal. They need to know who he is. They don't have any clue. They got William Jackson III, you know, who's a rookie and a first-round pick. And let's be real, as Duke Tobin told us last week, if people really listen, you know, in tune to the podcast, if a corner is the best player available in the first or second round, they're going there.
Right.
So, you know, it is. This one's turned interesting just because of the ceiling on the corner market, Paul. I thought for sure Dre was back. When we started all this talk at the end of the year, I mean, I thought it was going to be a big number. It's going to be a big number, but I don't know the answer to your question.
Yeah.
How high are they willing to go? I really don't. It's Monday.
I don't either.
You know? And frankly, I don't think the Bengals know. Mm-hmm. You know?
No. Well, I think they have an idea, but you know, it's like one of those things. It's like when you go to buy a house, right? And you're like, this is the top of our budget until you see that house. And you're like, okay, but it's only like 20 grand over the top of our budget. What are we really talking about? Is it, but don't we really want this house? What's the other options? Well, our other house is arrested. So like, you know what I mean? Like right. You start rationalizing as you realize how close you are, and you end up overextending yourself over what even you thought was the top of your budget because it's just what you want. It's just you're so close, and it can end up like that where they have maybe the top of their budget, Dre Kirkpatrick money in mind right now, but if they're close, and it starts getting a little itchy, you say, all right, let's just do it. Let's make some concessions. Let's pull a little bit more out of this area or that area. And whether that's, you know, future stuff, that's not really their style as much, but they have shown in the past when they've really wanted it, they will do that. Right. They have also, and I've been using this example, people have asked me about Dre. They've also shown an example in the past that even when it's something they really love, there's just certain places they won't go.
Right, exactly.
Michael Johnson is the perfect example of this when he left in free agency a few years back. And that is, everyone knows how much the Bengals love Michael Johnson, how much they did love him. He's like one of the only guys they've ever franchised.
Right.
I mean, they gave him $11.5 million at a time when no one was doing that. It's just straight cash. And they brought him back because they just love him. They think he's a special person, a special player, and they love rewarding guys like that. But yet, when he ended up one of the premier free agents and Tampa Bay dropped whatever it ended up being, it was like 5 and 43.5 and 20 plus guaranteed, they just said, Mike, we love you, but we cannot pay you that much. We cannot rationalize paying you that much.
Right.
And I think the Bengals end up looking, if you look at the path of his career since then, like they've made the right decision. Especially considering they got him for about a quarter of that, the next year later, plus a comp pick. But that aside, it's that how far are you willing to stretch yourself? The Bengals clearly will a little bit, but they're not going to go. They're just not going to take it into a crazy place. And so you cost yourself possibly other things in the future if you overpay for a number two corner. And I would say overpay if you didn't have two number one picks behind him.
Right.
Right? I mean, can you tell me that you don't trust your Duke Tobin and your staff enough to not say one of those two guys can rise to number two corner status. And this is all under the assumption that Adam Jones is staying.
Right.
Which adds another weird thing to this whole mix, which just tosses more leverage into Drake or Patrick's lap with the Bengals.
Right.
Because,
yeah, that,
I mean, they, well, there's a chance right. they won't know who's going to be. They could have two new starting corners on opening day, depending on what this, at least, at the very least, what a suspension is for Adam Jones.
Yeah, and the, you know, the head coach isn't really going to be in favor of that one. it is, Paul. It's really interesting, and it flips to the other side of that, where the Bengals have sort of protected themselves at corner, but yet not at guard. You know, like Christian Westerman, maybe they learned the Marvin Jones lesson and drafted a guy a year ago thinking, okay, let's have someone there. The Bengals have two number one picks. Mm-hmm. And you're right, you mentioned the Adam Jones thing, which by the way, you know, no updates there from Duke Tobin and Marvin Lewis is kind of like, we'll see, you know. So it is interesting, and I'll address this real quick because I know it's Bengals fans, and they just get all in a tizzy when, you know, the Darth Vader from Pittsburgh's mentioned, because that, you know, that's one team that surprise surprise is being quote unquote connected to Drake or Patrick. Why wouldn't it be, right? I'm actually surprised. Like, he doesn't fit. Kevin Zeitler doesn't fit in Pittsburgh, but I think, honestly, any agent out there is going to throw the Steelers to his player's name.
Of course.
to see if it, I mean, it'll get the fan base riled up. I don't think Mike Brown could care one way or another. You know, look, there's a hole there. I mean, Steelers just drafted a guy in the first round, Artie Burns.
Artie Burns, yeah.
A year ago. You know, but here's the thing about the Steelers. It's interesting. It's they have some cap room, but Dre would be the seventh player on their team making $10 million or more potentially. And they'd have nine guys over $8 million next year. You know, Steelers tend to wind up in salary cap hell on a regular basis.
Right.
So if Dre or Patrick were to leave to Pittsburgh, he might be back in Cincinnati before you know it.
Right. You're exactly right. And that's the other thing. And a thing that has helped the Bengals in previous years and that we're going to get into in a little bit here involving Ray Maaluga and why he's still on the team right now. Bengals players see what happened with Leon Hall and with Ray Maaluga currently and other guys that have had – you are so much more likely to collect every dime of that contract and not just the guaranteed amount if you sign with Cincinnati than you ever are anywhere else in the league because of the loyalty that the Bengals have shown to guys that they pay. They just don't cut guys because they can save some cap money on it. They don't. Right. I mean, and Adam Jones might currently be another example of that.
Right.
There's a loyalty there that just isn't anywhere else in the league and it drives Bengals fans mad. And I agree with you. I mean, they're so far on the other side of the fence at this point that, I mean, they probably need to come back a little bit and realize that players understand it's a business. They're okay with these things happening once in a while. But that's not – the Bengals want to be able to sit at the negotiating table and point to a bunch of examples and say, you will get what's on this paper.
Right.
Whereas other teams show you paper and they won't guarantee you anything. It might as well be a tiny little gas station receipt because right. You're going to get whatever's guaranteed to you, probably. So do you want to know that you'll likely, if the Bengals offer you 5 years and $45 million, there's just a pretty darn good chance you're going to get $45 million, or are you going to sign for 5 years and $60 million somewhere else with $20 million in guarantees, knowing you might only get that 20 and then have to start all over again?
Right.
That's the stance that they want to have at the negotiating table. And I think it's real. And we had Dre on Beyond the Stripes at the end of the year, and obviously we've had lots of conversations with Dre about this. He's been pretty open. He said, I love Cincinnati. I don't want to leave. And I talked to George Iloka at the Super Bowl, and I was asking about advice he had for Dre and things that they talked about. And he said, I told him, you know, get your money, but don't take top dollar at the sake of being happy. You know? Right. And Dre's very much a I want to be happy guy.
Right.
He came from a small town, and this kind of money is crazy. And I think, and he really, I think, genuinely likes what Cincinnati is for him in his life. And I think he gets a little nervous about the idea of starting somewhere else. And that doesn't, you know, so maybe there is a little bit of hometown discount that the Bengals can get, or at the very least, a little bit of understanding what their loyalty means in the big picture. Guys that come from other teams, they wouldn't even have an understanding of what the difference is in that contract stuff because they're not tuned into it. But if you've been paying attention, like a guy like Dre Wood, you're very tuned into the chances of you collecting all of that and being a life close to lifetime Cincinnati Bengal.
Right.
That and I think that could – I think the Bengals certainly are hoping that that ends up being the difference.
Yeah, and you know, probably a guy the Bengals would like to use in that example – is the last part of that big three pawn. It's Andrew Whitworth.
Yep.
And you know, the multiple deals he signed throughout his career. Whit's a smart dude. And he's like, look, at this point, you know, while we, by sheer delight, I think a lot of people would love to see you do five straight mock drafts this week. I forgot that.
I know. I had forgotten it for a second, and someone reminded me on Twitter, and I was like, oh my God, I did say that. I was in a ragey place at that point.
look, you know, unlike the other two guys who are in the primes at marquee positions, while Andrew Whitworth plays a marquee position, the thing that the number that no team will ignore is the fact that he will be 36 years old as his team is getting ready for the 2017 postseason. 36, 35, 36, 37 are scary numbers in the NFL. Just really scary numbers. I mean, the Bengals learned it firsthand with Carlos Dansby last year. Obviously, they know Whit. They don't think you know, their player personnel people don't feel his cliff is coming like it did for Carlos Dansby. But, you know, Witt's going to listen. But look, he's a guy who from the beginning says he wants to be back. Not just that he wants to be back, because I think everybody does. They all got to say that, right? I mean, he flat out said, I believe I'll be back. And when the player says that, and then essentially the entire front office and the head coach is like, we believe, like, that's going to get done. So I that hasn't changed to me. He might make the Bengals fans sweat a little bit and maybe take a call from some other teams, as is his right, for the first time in his career. Because look, who wouldn't love to hear four or five teams be like, we think you're great, you're awesome, come play for us. I mean, who wouldn't want to hear that?
Right.
But in the end, I don't think anything's changed there. You know, and Andrew Whitworth's going to be back with the Bengals in 2017.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And if I end up having to do five straight mock drafts, I mean, that will really be a low moment in my life. I can tell you that much. Okay. I do want to bring in a little bit of audio that we had from this week, and that was some of Ken Zampezi, who we talked to later in the week at the Combine. Touched on some player personnel type of stuff that I think is going to be relevant, not only stuff that we just talked about, but where we want to go next. We want to kind of talk about Brandon LaFell and sort of an interesting quandary that's happened at receiver. And I think this will have some time. This won't be an issue this week. LaFell will be a second, third wave type guy. There's just an interesting dynamic that's happening here. So just to give you some perspective of our conversation with Ken Zampezi at the Combine. So here's a little bit edited up Ken Zampezi from this past week.
When you evaluate receivers, what's the challenge of a small school guy versus a big school guy when you haven't seen him with as much tape against top competition in trying to figure out that?
It's just one element that's a bit more unknown, but the all the measurables, height, weight, speed, and you watch them run and separate, those things are the same, but there's an unknown as to, okay, now the competition's a little different. what's your competitive nature, what's your ability to adjust to a guy that's longer than all the other guys you've seen before. It's a bit of an unknown, but you got to trust on the guy's competitive nature that you've scouted, his personality, style, his competitiveness, his height, weight, speed type things, and change of direction ability.
Does that make things like this important to where he is stacking up, whether you're just looking at height, weight, speed compared to guys, you know, to see what that is, you know, as opposed to on small school when he's, you know, blown by guys that probably wouldn't even be in the combine?
This gives you a way to stack up one element of how you evaluate a guy.
Yeah.
It has its benefits here, but there's just because a guy runs fast doesn't mean it applies. Mm-hmm. But as you couple that with competitive nature, level of competition, the targets that you've seen on tape, him doing similar things to you, that what you have in your offense, the values start going up and up and up as you couple it with other factors.
Right. You guys go off tape, so you know, you guys pride yourself on going off the college tape and not getting lured in by other stuff. Is that tough for a guy, for like a kid from Western Michigan as opposed to a Clemson guy that, you know, you can't go off the tape really? I mean, I guess you can, but I mean, you really can't because the tape is not doesn't have the competition.
Yeah, it's one element that's not there, but there's so many other things that go into it, too, that as long as a guy has enough games under his belt and you can see him do it, then you feel good about it. And then you put that together with the fit of the personality, the competitive nature of the player, the accountability of the guy, and you come up with a fairly good assessment of, boy, I really think he could do this for us.
Kenny, is receiver one of those positions where the 40, I know the 40 is not the end-all, be-all, but is receiver one of the positions where you say, well, if he doesn't hit a certain landmark, you can't really look at him in the first, second round?
There are certain landmarks that go with rounds high, and that's one of them. It's not necessarily the be-all, end-all. There's, you know, a guy that wasn't extremely fast in last year's draft, and you know, he went in the first round, and it happens each year. It's just, what is that coupled with his athletic ability, his ability to catch the ball, adjust to the ball, competitive nature? I mean, there's so many things that go into it. That's a big one for the position.
Do you feel like adding speed over the top to your offense is an element that you guys maybe need a little more of?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That was maybe missing for you guys last year.
Yeah, you'd like to have that to go to.
Yeah.
More of it. You always want more of it.
Yeah.
What do you get?
Where do you get it?
Is the draft the best place?
Yeah, we haven't signed anybody in free agency yet, so it's the draft for us.
How does that?
Is enough speed there? I mean, how is this class? How's this crop of wideouts? They say after the second round, you're not going to get speed.
Really?
Well,
we're going to find out. We're going to time all those guys. We'll find out. Yeah, I think we will. I think there's more to choose from.
How do you think having that more of that element would open up the stuff that you guys were trying to do last? I mean, obviously it always does in offense, but particularly with what you've been trying to put in, what's the biggest thing that would do for you if you had that?
Well, you can tack a whole field faster.
Yeah.
You know, that particular element, you know, it's a threat. Mm-hmm. And the more threats you have, the better you're going to be.
Yeah. Is there I mean, those guys, you're not just talking, because you're not just talking about over the top. You're also talking about whether it's under screen, tunnels, or bubble screens. That type
catch
of stuff is
run,
really the
yeah
the
separation. As more explosive plays go with speed, typically.
Yeah.
You know, as long as there's enough football IQ and instincts that go along with it, not to run fast and run right into guys. You know, there's all these other factors that go into it. That's why this is important. Going to see the kid at a school is important. What the scouts brought back is important, and putting all that together with the game tape, and then think, what can he do for us? How do we value him and what we're trying to do and where our needs are at?
Yeah.
I guess that was probably pretty lacking last year, was the deep ball and the yak. That's two categories that probably fell off.
I don't know, did you count them up?
Well, my instinct would tell me that it was. I didn't count them up, but you know, you didn't have as many 40 balls.
No, we're in top 10 in both areas, though, plus 20, plus 40. Completions were, but it wasn't quite what it was the year before, in the plus 40 range.
Right.
But we were up there in top 10 in both areas.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, and you were up there despite not having AJ and not having Eifert, so there's got to be some encouragement there.
Yeah, you play with what you got, and we have good players, and it's not surprising to me that we were still up there with the guys we were playing with. which was they were good players. We just didn't score enough points.
That's really what it was in the
end. Yeah, we're down 6 points per game on average, so that's not good enough.
Is that a red zone issue or is it other
partly
issues?
A red zone issue, sure. Execution.
What's the next step for Boyd? Do you envision him moving out more time at the two, or do you want that, or do you like him? I mean, he obviously did both, but he spent majority of his did a lot of his damage in the slot. Or.
He's got enough skills to go inside and outside. There's certainly things that he does better than other things. He has his areas of strength. I just want to see him play at a high rate of speed all the time. Mm-hmm. The consistency of the rate of speed, the effort, the energy, the mental toughness of another year, what that would bring, the comfortable knowing the offense and how that would translate into speed of play. Those things would be, I'm looking forward to seeing those from him.
How far away is Core from being a factor?
Well, we saw at the end of the year he's a factor, as is, before spring. So I know Coach Urban will have him further along than what we saw on tape by the time we get to the season. And that's going to be a fun development to watch.
He's an intriguing guy, isn't he? We're talking about size and speed at this combine.
Size, speed, tough. He's got three really important things.
Yeah, you would think that's kind of what you're looking for, right? I mean, yes.
Yeah, that's why we drafted him in the first place. That's why we wanted to get a chance to see him at the end of the year play to see exactly, okay, where's he at, you know,
what he
can do. He's really green. He's learning the spot, you know. He's learning our offense. In the things that he does well, we're able to see him catch balls down the field, the speed and the strength running through arms. You know, he's very strong runner.
Is he that over-the-top guy you need, or do you need something else? You need something faster than even Cody Core.
Cody Core's fast. He can go over the top. We just need reps at doing it with him. We're comfortable at landmarks, tracking speed, throwing the ball to that body at that speed. We need turns at bat with him.
So there's Kenze Apizi, and you know, talking about speed and the need for speed, which has been a topic of every coach since the season has ended, and that we've talked about often is and why they liked Will Fuller last year in the draft, because he was the one guy who was fast, and
right.
They were willing to ignore his drop issues, which fans of the Texans aren't right now. They want speed. They want a deep speed threat opposite AJ Green. Ken Zampezi loves chunk plays. Who doesn't? Huge. Right. Everybody did. The Bengals offense has been so much about, four go routes. And it's worked very well that they want a guy that is just a dynamic threat. And then also a yak threat on all these bubble screens and things like that.
Yeah, it's that was the one thing. It wasn't so much Marvin Jones specifically a year ago. It was the skill set Marvin Jones brought. And while Tyler Boyd, proved himself more than capable as a rookie receiver starting in the league, in my opinion, you know, despite that he was a third-round pick, you know, he essentially was Mohamed Sanu, you know, a little faster version of Mo Sanu, but not fast enough to take the top off of a defense. So I think if you were to get that guy in 2017, it changes the dynamic of the offense, because, look, I don't know if you can count on Tyler Eifert to be around for more than a handful of games. So you need someone to bring that to keep those safeties honest and away from AJ Green. And it's just something they did not have at all a year ago. And it really showed, especially, you know, in those games where AJ Green was quote unquote taken away, if you will. Pittsburgh comes to mind, especially early in the year. And it was just, some of these other games too, where early on, you know, if AJ would have one of those crazy Miami on Thursday night, New York opening weekend, if he had one of those games, maybe the Bengals win. It just didn't. But that was kind of ridiculous. For as good as AJ Green is, you can't ask a guy to catch like 9 for 165 every week.
Yeah, and that's what they needed to win. Yeah, it's what they needed in order to win at that point.
Right.
So here's the thing with Brandon LaFell. If you can bring him back at a number that you're comfortable with, he doesn't hit that speed marker for you. And what we just saw this Saturday at the combine was John Ross from Washington running a 4.22 that some people timed as a 4.19, 4.16. We're talking crazy generational speed. And this is not like Usain Bolt trying to figure out how to play in the NFL. This is a guy who was already a first round pick, who, if you watch his skill as a receiver for Washington, can play. And now you add, so it's DeSean Jackson without the baggage and maybe better, and obviously younger and cheaper.
Right.
We talked about it at the combine. I remember I actually put this on our Instagram story on ENQ Bengals, which if you're not following us, you should follow us at ENQ Bengals on Instagram. I had up there where I had a little video of him talking with a text over it that said, "I have no idea how he ends up with the Bengals, but he sure is fast." Okay. Because everybody, mid late first round was sort of the thought on him. Yeah, everyone said he's fast, he's really good, but whatever, we'll see. And then he goes out and runs that, and everyone says, "Wait, is he a top 10 pick?" Because everybody in this league wants speed, and the Bengals, as much as anybody, wants speed. So if there was a team at the back half of the top 10 that would be maybe willing to take a risk and has shown in the past they are willing to stick their neck out for a guy that they believe to be a top 10, even if other people maybe don't, they believe in whatever their scouting says, maybe he's the guy. And so let's play this scenario out. Or can you sign Brandon LaFell if you think you're going to get a receipt, if there's a chance that you take a John Ross or even a Corey Davis or even a Mike Williams in the first round? Then what happens? Then what happens when you show up? I mean, you just wasted that money on Brandon LaFell.
Yeah, my initial gut reaction, Paul, is yes, because you're not drafting a guard to start in the first round and then pay Kevin Zeitler $55 million. Like, I think Brandon LaFell's money, I do think, you may disagree with me, I think his production and plus the rise in cap plus his character gets him a two-year deal in some form or fashion, whether that's, an option or the quote-unquote guaranteed money, but it's not really, whatever. I do think Brandon LaFell's going to get 2 years somewhere, even maybe in Cincinnati. But the total number isn't going to be crazy. And I think, look, the Bengals, this all goes back to what the Bengals do and how they operate, in my opinion. They know what they like. They know they like who they know specifically. Yes. And while I will give them credit, and with the Tyler Boyd thing and them saying right away who's going to start, and I could see them saying that about their number 9 pick. You don't know. You don't know if that guy's going to be there. And if you waited over a month to address that position at all, you're really hurting yourself. Because really, what veteran free agents available in May? So I think they kind of have to operate where they're sort of exclusive of one another. And let's be honest, Paul, I mean, you and I both got to know Joe really well. And while he wants to play and he feels he's productive, I really don't think there's going to be an issue with him if they draft a kid and suddenly his snaps are reduced. Like, he won't be happy as a competitor, but it's not like he's going to call us and make a headline. So I think there's something to that too. And look, LaFell might even move inside a little bit. There might be a question about a separation there, but look, he knows, the one thing he can't do is run fast down the field. And I think they can find some other spots for that guy. Should the other guy be there at 9 or 41, I guess. Yeah. So I think they have to, but that's part of that. That's what makes free agency before the draft interesting.
Yeah, it is. And I will be interesting if they you know, because, you know, you could do a 2 years, six or seven, and get Brandon LaFell, I would think. And maybe that's worth it. But if that comes at the expense of going over the top to make Drake or Patrick happy, is that worth it? Or are you willing to go into the season? Or are you also willing to say, okay, we're a worst-case scenario, Cody Kor is our starting two, and you just got to really work and hope that he takes the next step? Or Tyler Boyd is your starting two, and when you go to three, you have, you know, you have Kor out there and then some young kid that you draft. Because you'll know, your priorities will change if you don't get Brandon LaFell back or decide not to bring him back. Your priorities will be different at 9, at 41, and in the third round. But I don't know if you can get that kind of speed in the third round.
Right.
And as Ken Zampezi said, that's the question. We'll time them all and we'll see if it's out there. But I think that's going to be another interesting thing to watch. This plays together too. I kind of want to get into this how much money the Bengals have number conversation that's out there. Mm-hmm. Real quick. I mean, there seems to be some the how much the Bengals have or are spending under the cap is like under debate. And it's, you know, this 15 has been floated out there, which I think is that's an incredibly conservative number to what it will actually end up being. And the bottom line in this conversation before we dive too deep in it is we'll find out what their number actually is, whether what they're floating out there is correct or not. Okay.
Right.
Like, they're going to spend it and we're going to see it in front of our eyes. They spent X. So whether they want us to put a conservative number out there so they look cool when it goes over the top or some sort of, I have no idea. I think they've been pretty honest with the media about where they stand and how they treat the cap. And they actually have spent a whole lot of money. You know, they're in the top 10 in the league in money spent over recent years. So I think people are getting really bent out of shape out of that number. They seem like they've kind of, people have really, really just lost it over that.
Right.
Now, I don't know why.
It's just, it's funny, Paul, because again, it's sort of the hot take James problem that I think some people in Cincinnati run into is look, if people were to really Google, and it's really all you can do outside of Cincinnati and all 32 teams, there's only one team out there where the reporting indicates how much they're actually going to spend. And there's a reason for that. Usually all you see is just a total number, right? Like the Browns, $102 million. Well, they're not spending $102 million on free agents because they can't. Like that means that they're going to be in cap hell by the end of the year because, you know, they don't have a practice squad and guys got hurt and they can't pay them and, you know, all this other stuff. So, we write what we know and that's how the Bengals do it. People may disagree with it, but in their effort to sort of explain what they do, they get killed for what they do, but yet they're the only ones who explain it. And I could tell you that other fan bases around the league would be really interested. Trust me, by the end of this, when Team A doesn't spend all of their cap, their fan bases are like, why didn't we spend all of the money? And it's like, well, because you can't. Like, it does. It's not just like, you know, you have $20 in your wallet. You do. Like, it's $20. But, like, you kind of, you know, you still owe, you know, your buddy, you know, $9 for making bad Jaguars bets, and you got to save it to the side. So, like, you know,
why you got to do that? Why you got to do that? I don't know why it's got to be bad Jaguars bets. It's just such an unnecessary.
I don't know. It's the only thing that came to mind.
Right, you're right. You're exactly right. When you know certain expenses are in your, and you know, I think. like I said, some people will say, well, it should be in the 20 to 25 range then in that idea. Well, maybe. And maybe that's where they end up. And maybe that's where they end up. And like I said, we will see what the real number is. I think it's people are arguing over a smaller amount than they realize when you really talk about how money is allocated and where what bucket it ends up in. Let's just wait and see before anybody goes going crazy about some numbers that were reported and act like they have a true understanding of how an NFL franchise is supposed to use their money. And we get accused as being, well, you know, we're just homers, right? Isn't that right. Like the deal? Like we're just homers and all we do is repeat whatever we're Bengals parrots. We're telling you the way that they operate. Okay. And this is how they get to the numbers that they end up at, how they get to the cap. Any team can choose to get to the cap any way they want to. This is how they choose to get to the cap. And they can alter things as they go along and whatever, but it's very similar to the way most teams who aren't constantly having to cut guys and go through huge highs, peaks and valleys, things like that. It's how they work. And, you know, it's just a lot more complicated than looking at they have this space, they should spend that. Let's sign everybody.
Yeah, and to kind of – now, I will agree with and I think it's been clear to anyone who's read us, beginning with our personnel moves this team should make way at the start of this offseason, and just generally when you mentioned this earlier about Ray Maluga and some other guys, it is fair to question – sticking to that methodology so religiously, and Ray Maluga is a perfect example. Sorry, Ray, it's just one of those things. You're the name on the list this year as the guy with no dead cat money. you know, it was Leon Hall. It was Don Tepeco a year ago.
Yeah.
It is fair for fans to say, why can't we save that $3.7 million from Ray Maluga in 2017 and apply it to Kevin Zeitler or apply it to Dre or apply it to, you know, whoever. That is totally fair. And because it, in all intents and purposes, you know, you're not really affecting your opening day roster. You're not affecting a guy who's going to play 40% of your snaps. And I think while you're right, Paul, it is a selling point for the Bengals to go to a free agent and say, look at all these guys we pay out to the end, that doesn't mean you have to pay everybody to the end.
Right. And they've still done right by Ray Maluga.
Yeah.
no one's going to contend that dude hasn't gotten some cash.
Right. His most recent extension, I think, says it all. I mean, I think there was – actually, Paul, a little inside Bengals beat. Paul was squiring me about Cincinnati, or was about to, when Ray Maluga signed his last extension.
Yeah,
you were that happened.
Squiring, yes, I was.
You were taking me to the Eagle on over the Rhine.
Yeah,
that trying was to great. Be like, hey, dude, you know what? I was an unrestricted free agent. No, I was a restricted free agent, and sure. You know, you were making a pitch. You were recruiting me, so I know what Andrew Whitworth feels like. I'm telling you, know,
you do. Come play for us. Come play for us. That was it. Except. Yeah, we didn't quite have like a $10 million offer sheet to throw down behind that.
Yeah, the money was a little different.
It's a whole different ballgame. And I don't think the NFL industry isn't worthy of being ranked behind Lumberjack on you know, career rankings.
Right.
Actually, maybe it should be, but that's a whole that's a definitely a different podcast.
Right.
The Maluga situation. It's really weird. I do want to bring in Paul Gunther. I think this – he kind of talks a little bit about Ray with us and with me, and I was just sort of very blunt with him about it, about what's going on there. So let's bring in Paul Gunther talking about Ray Maluga.
Does when you're in the nickel so much, guys have to run and cover – does Maluga need to start playing at a lighter weight, or
or does he? I mean, he's obviously a great run stopper, right, but does he need to change his game a little bit to stick around and play more?
Well, I think he realizes the way the league is now. It's not, you know, it's like, you know, I tell Ray a lot that, you know, he's synonymous with the fullback. The middle, this run stopping middle linebacker is the fullbacks. As soon as you see the fullback run on the field, you can run on too. You know,
yeah.
But they don't have very often.
No.
You know, so. So I think he realizes, in order for him to play in, really for us or for any team, you know, he's got to, you know, where he's got to be coming in,
yeah.
And we don't have time to play into shape. We got to come in shape and prove it. So I mean, because I'm not gonna put anybody in the game if I haven't seen him on the practice field, and that goes for Nick or for Willie Jackson or for Denard or for Billings. I'm not gonna put. If you don't show up in the practice field, I don't feel confident. You know, that's why, you know, sometimes on the D-line, it's like, well, if you don't show in practice, I don't feel any level of defense. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, so that's what Ray's got to do. I think he understands that.
Yeah.
And I think also it helps him extend his career.
Because
it's not so hard on the joints and lower legs and all those type of things.
Yeah.
All right, so there's Paul Gunther talking about Ray Maluga, and we've got more from all those guys on some draft stuff and all that we're going to get to over the coming weeks, but we need to – it's free agency time, so we want to make sure we stay on that. And now we got to get to what's making you mad, Jim. But I'll start something new this week. So you always get a chance to rant about what's making you mad. I feel like we it's a lot of negativity that we put out there. Like, we're always so mad. We don't want to be known as like the angry podcasters, you know? Like, I want people to know.
Wrong with it.
We generally have a. You're like, anything wrong with that? Let's be the angry guys. We generally, I feel like sometimes in life, have a pretty good general disposition. I feel
you
like
do.
We can be, I do. So maybe then we should play more to our personalities. I feel like you're mad is dragging me down into this world where people think I'm mad too. And it showed earlier. I just went on a weird rant at the beginning of this podcast that I couldn't control myself. Jeez. You're rubbing off on me. So I think I need to purposely insert a new segment that we do alongside of why is Jim so mad and it's why is Paul so happy. I feel like if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I think we need to start here just to try to even out the yin and the yang, just some of our karma. We need to change our karma a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm going to start out with why is Paul so happy? You know why I'm happy, Jim?
Why so happy, Paul?
Why are you so happy? I'm happy because I'm one of the few people in the NFL beat writing world that's happy about this. And that is that the NFL scouting combine is in Indianapolis, Indiana. God bless it. Oh my God, thank you. If we, you know, all these writers from across the league have to come to the combine. That's just part of the deal. If I had to fly and deal with a whole bunch of pre-travel and not had the ability to just drive home whenever I'm done, I would hate the combine more than I already kind of do. I mean, it's like me, you, Mike Chappell and Indy and like maybe the Chicago guys are probably the only ones who say, man, how about that Indianapolis in February, boy? Isn't that great? Because it is cold. I had to drive. I basically drove through a tornado on the way up there, but I didn't care. I just happily driving through a tornado whistling. This is so great. I can choose to come up when I want to come up. I don't have to come up the extra day on Tuesday. When everything wraps up on Saturday, I can just dip out of there. I don't have to stick around and, you know, and leave myself buffer time by coming back Sunday or even Monday. Man, that sure isn't. It's one of the few perks of being one of these small market Midwestern NFL towns. It still makes me happy. Hopefully they don't move it to LA in 2 years.
Yeah, I agree. It is. Yes, I think there's only a handful of people who like the fact that it's in Indianapolis. That is a reason to be happy because honestly, look, anything that makes our lives easier in general will at least allow me some measure of satisfaction. And
You, you can't even give in that there's a that it's the word happy, really. There's some level of satisfaction. God, so angry. Why are you mad?
Dude, yo, professional athletes, look, there's some smart guys out there, some smart ladies in pro sports, Paul, there are. But I cannot believe that Kyrie Irving thinks the world is flat and Arian Foster thinks he could fight a wolf because he has opposable thumbs. Like, these things made me so angry. I was like, you are just oh, you know?
Wow.
Just things like a wolf will kill you. Like, you just saying, like, yo, like, hey.
That shouldn't be a debated fact. A wolf will eat you.
Like, hey, I'll let a wolf bite me because, yo, I've got opposable thumbs and I can grab it then. Like, I think you're missing the fundamental, you know, like, the whole reason a wolf exists is to eat. You know, it's like saying, you're going to, you know, hey, I'm going to fight this alligator because I got two legs. Like, it just, and then the whole earth is flat thing. I mean, it just makes me mad because.
Which one's more ridiculous?
Oh, my God.
Well, I think flat is definitely more ridiculous. We have satellite images.
Flat is, and Draymond Green, you know, is like, hey, man, I could take a flat image and make it round on my phone, so I don't know. I mean, look, that makes me mad because, like, look, we know we work in the toy department. It's a joke. It's fun. We try to be serious at times. But, I mean, oh, these guys, you say stuff like that, and you're just like, man, I don't even know where to go with it. It just made me angry. I'm like, this is not smart. It's not cute. It's not funny. Well, it's kind of funny, but it makes me angry because it's like, come on.
I know. Guys. Flat Earth guy. I don't. You know, at the very least, I can buy that you maybe think you can beat up a wolf. Like that there's a shot. There's a slim chance that you could beat up a wolf. Because you have opposable thumbs. There's a slight chance. There's at least a very, very, very slim chance of that. There is no chance the Earth is flat. None. People go up into space all the time. They look down at a round Earth. It's not that hard. So I'm madder at Kyrie Irving than I am at Arian Foster. All right, let's get out of here. We need a song.
Yeah. I don't know if we've gone like old school hip hop in a long time. I mean, I remember I suggested Money Trees a few weeks ago from Kendrick Lamar, but I don't know. We were talking about all this stuff and my first thought, again, free agency, there's so many songs about money. I mean, we could play like the next hour and a half of this podcast and just be like, you know, essentially a mix. I like Bone Thugs and Harmony, man.
You do.
I mean, go way back. You go in the way back machine before Drake or Patrick could spell his last name, I think. I don't remember. I mean, he's a young dude. That was 94, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if that's too old. Is that too old for a millennial audience? Do we need to bring that to him? I don't know.
Let's bring it to him. Let's do it. I like it. Bone Thugs. For the love of money, I'm into it. So we'll do that. We'll go out and we'll be back next week. Maybe we'll have more Bone Thugs. I don't know. But we'll be back next week and we will have a look back at the first weekend of free agency. And we'll probably be talking about what ended up happening with the big three, Witt, Dre, and Kevin Zeitler, who probably will have their number up this weekend, and we'll see if they're still Bengals or where they end up playing. So that will be a very interesting reaction pod next week. Look for that. Looking forward to bringing it to you. And All right. Well, we're out of here. Thanks, Bone Thugs and Harmony, for taking back over. And we'll talk to you next week on the BBP. Hey, taking the shots on the louse and top of the throne. Call up my homie, tape at home, polishing his Mac 10 Chrome. Get a lick, we can hit so cold, a clip this once again in the town. To the zone with a flip of bird, my wit to the curb, so I swerve and roll loud. To pick up the rhythm of thugs, that's sprayed on the mission for calling up Mo now. Joe, when it hit the bump, gonna ride like every day with four more thugs. I'ma roll with it, stroll with it till we end up in the grave and lay. Spinning it, make drive lean. We spotted the place and quickly rolled up. Gotta make that money, man. Hopped out of the rides, it flipped and showed up. Fucking a kaboom, so drop it on down with them into the room, them doom. And I'm shaking the dice and hit them in naturals on them fools. And I'm looking lovely, you better not think it's funny. I'm coming up quicker than that quatch, cause flesh be loving is money. I'm giving up love to the hustlers, all them facts that busters. Making that money, stand on your feet. And you better believe, gotta have that cheese for the green leaves. Never catch me sleep, steady on the get my stand down from a crime and I hit up the 99. Gotta keep that bankroll making me say a quarter's nickels and dime. Hit up a nickel for lick up that 211. Gotta get what's mine, been feeling. Me kicking up dust on me trailing, feeling 187. That's how it is, that I got to have it in the night quad. Missing the check a meal and still be real. Thugging on the clock, like creeping on the come up. Won't sleep till I'm done up. Gotta blaze my gun up, hunt up another block.